Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to you from the memorial to Thomas Jefferson, now under construction on the south shore of the tidal basin in Washington, D.C., about 3,000 feet south of the Washington Monument and on the center line of the White House. 9 minutes ago, President of the United States, Franklin D. Roosevelt, arrived at this scene. His car drove up right next to our mutual microphone, and he has now walked down the ramp toward the speaker's stand. He will lay the cornerstone this afternoon, and he will be introduced to you by Stuart G. Gibney, chairman of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Commission. The president is now standing next to the speaker's stand, and we introduce to you in a moment now, Mr. Gibney.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, since the groundbreaking ceremonies held on December 15th last, the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Commission has made, as you can see, most substantial progress in the building of this memorial to Thomas Jefferson. The foundations have been completed, and the superstructure is now well underway. The Imperial Danby Vermont marble of the exterior and the Georgia white marble used in the interior of the memorial are now being set. And today we are assembled to lay the cornerstone. We believe that the memorial, when completed, will be admired and acclaimed by the American people as a beautiful shrine dedicated to that far-seeing progressive statesman, Thomas Jefferson, and to the great liberal principles for which he so valiantly contended. Mr. President, the Commission has conferred with you frequently and is extremely grateful for the valuable support, advice, and assistance you have always so cheerfully given us. And we are proud today to welcome you here at this ceremony. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present to this assemblage the President of the United States, Honorable Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mr. Gibney, gentlemen of the commission, this is the second occasion on which I have had the privilege of coming in an official capacity to this site. And I hope that by January in 1941, I shall be able to come to the final dedication of the memorial itself. In the earliest days of this republic of ours, the republic under the Constitution, the representatives of the several states of the Union were in substantial agreement that a national capital should be founded in a federal district set apart from the jurisdiction of any individual state. That purpose was in a true sense a symbol of a realization of national unity. And the final location of the national capital in this place proclaimed a proper compromise between the interests of the North, the South, the seaboard, and the interior, as they existed at that time. In all of the 150 years of our life as a constitutional nation, many memorials to its civil and military chiefs have been set up in the national capital. But it has been reserved to two of those leaders to receive special tribute in the nation's capital by the erection of national shrines, perpetuating their memories over and above the appreciation and the regard tendered to other great citizens of the Republic. And today we lay the cornerstone of a third great shrine, adding the name of Thomas Jefferson to the names of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. I have spoken of the national character of the District of Columbia itself, a capital that represents today the vitality not of 13 Atlantic seaboard states, but of 48 states that encompass the whole width of the continent. This vitality envisages many, many-sided interests, and it is therefore fitting that among hundreds of monuments to famous Americans, the three great shrines are dedicated to men of many-sided qualities. Washington represented abilities recognized in every part of the young nation, and indeed in every part of the civilized world of his day. For he was not only a great military leader, not only a great moderator in bringing together discordant elements in the formation of a constitutional nation, not only a great executive of that nation in its troublesome early years, but also a man of vision and accomplishments in private civil fields, talented engineer and surveyor, planner of highways and canals, patron of husbandry, friend of scientists, and fellow of political thinkers. Lincoln, too, was a many-sided man. Pioneer of the wilderness, counsel for the underprivileged, soldier in an Indian war, master of the English tongue, rallying point for a torn nation, emancipator, not of slaves alone, but of those of heavy heart everywhere, foe of malice, and teacher of goodwill. To those we add today another American of many parts, not Jefferson, the founder of a party, but the Jefferson whose influence is felt today in many of the current activities of mankind. When in this year of 1939, America speaks of its Bill of Rights, we think of the author of the Statute for Religious Liberty in Virginia. When today Americans celebrate the anniversary of the 4th of July, 1776, our minds revert to Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence. And when each spring we take part in commencement exercises of schools and universities, we think back to the days of Jefferson, founder of the University of Virginia. When we think of his older contemporary, Benjamin Franklin, as the experimenter in physics and the sciences, we remember that Jefferson was an inventor of numerous small devices to make human life simpler and happier, and that he, too, experimented in the biology of livestock and of agriculture. In the current era of the erection of noble buildings in all parts of the country, we recognize the enormous influence of Jefferson in the American application of classic art to homes and public buildings, an influence that makes itself felt today in the selection of the design for this very shrine for which we are laying the cornerstone. But it was in the field of political philosophy that Jefferson's significance is transcendent. He lived as we live, in the midst of a struggle between rule by the self-chosen individual or the self-appointed few, and on the other hand, rule by the franchise and the approval of the many. He believed as we do that the average opinion of mankind is in the long run superior to the dictates of the self-chosen. During all the years that have followed Thomas Jefferson, the United States has expanded his philosophy into a greater achievement of security of the nation, security of the individual, and national unity than in any other part of the whole round world. It may be that the conflict between two forms of philosophy will continue for centuries to come. But we in the United States are more than ever satisfied that the Republican form of government, based on regularly recurring opportunities to our citizens to choose their leaders for themselves. And therefore, in memory of the many-sided Thomas Jefferson, and in honor of the ever-present vitality of his type of Americanism, we lay the cornerstone of this shrine.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard the President of the United States speaking at the laying of the cornerstone of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. And now the President, assisted by his naval aide, Captain Daniel J. Callahan, moves toward the 11-ton Vermont marble block, the cornerstone itself. He moves toward it where he will take the gravel, which has been mixed with the cement, move it around, and in a few moments, the cornerstone itself will actually be laid.